As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Break up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Harry Kane shepherding skills. Which year does each Champions League last 16 tie really belong in? Glenn Hoddle on heading. The box them in boys borderline. Scott Parker's 39-year-old kids. Graham Potter's mid-table vocabulary. Peter Drury's Audi switch. What exactly is a traditional clattering? And the life-affirming, heart-swelling, soul-enriching sound of Ali McCoy sort of knowing the location of the ancient city of Troy. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 206 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me for the adjudication panel today is David Walker, hotly anticipating the live show at Earth in Hackney tonight. All set?
Not really, but we will be. I'll be ready.
I suppose we can get away with saying that, really, by the time this goes out. Yes, no, but we are all set and it's going to be a cracking show and I'm excited, even if you don't sound it. Alongside you for the adjudication panel today is James Moore. He returns. Welcome back.
Hi, Adam.
You may have noticed, among his many other honours, that Harry Kane of Tottenham in England has been awarded the Freedom of the City of London. Just how unmarked is he?
He tweeted, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this pedantry, he tweeted that he was proud to be awarded the freedom of a city where he grew up. But as any London residents will know, the city of London isn't all of London, is
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Surely the city of the freedom of a city of London is just that rubbish bit with all the wankers in the Liverpool Street Station,
respect. Yeah, exactly. It's Bank, Liverpool Street, all round there.
Well, nobody lives there. If you go through there at the weekend, there's just nobody there.
Yeah. All the pubs are shut.
Anyone can have the freedom of the city of London. You just walk through there at the weekend.
I did that very thing, actually, on Saturday, walking through a deserted city of London. Didn't have my sheep with me, but I could have done.
Just how arduous would Harry Kane make walking his sheep through the city of London look? I feel like he'd make real hard work of it. He'd do it, and he'd get them. He'd bloody well get them across London, but he'd make it look seriously hard work.
He is actually very good at shepherding the bull, so...
Oh, okay.
He'd probably be all right, wouldn't he?
We'd
kind of back to the wolves, I guess. Wolves.
Natural leader now as well. So I feel like the sheep would follow.
He's a bit deep for me there. You want him up front leading the sheep?
But yeah, as I was saying, he can lead them from the front, but he can also usher them from the back as well. That's a sort of a player he's turned into. Anyway, time for the adjudication panel. Just before we began recording, the Champions League draw for the last 16 was completed. I want to continue a fine-ish Football Clichés tradition of running through all of the eight ties and deciding which year they really do belong in. James, let's start with RB Leipzig versus Manchester City. This is quite a new one, is it? I would go 2019-2020 at the very
end. Yeah, I'd say so. It's hyper modern, that one, isn't it? Obviously isn't, you know, Leipzig didn't exist before, I don't know, whenever it was.
Yeah.
10-12 years ago, City obviously a completely different club 14-15 years ago. So yeah, you couldn't go any earlier than 2019, I don't think.
Agreed. Yeah, with technical
limitations. In fact, it feels like behind closed doors, let's say 2020-21 behind closed doors. Maybe they did, the season after. But you know what I mean? That feels nice.
Good kind
of clinical, sedate, behind closed doors.
Yep, got it. Right, Dave, Club Bruges versus Benfica. I think a bit more historical. I think we could go sort of early 70s with this. It might have a sort of Wikipedia page for something, you know, comical that happened that made the first leg have to be postponed or something.
Exactly, because it's in the modern context, it's one of those ties where you're like, oh, not that great, but good for those two. They're both happy with that draw.
Yeah.
But they are both teams that on a sporkle of Champions League / European Cup winners, you might be thinking, oh, God, oh, Bruges won it in 1978 or something. Like, surprisingly glorious past, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah, decent dollop of history with that one. And I would have said the same about Liverpool versus Real Madrid a while ago, James. But now that feels a little bit more modern too. I'm very conflicted about this one. I don't know what year this fits in at all.
Yeah, it's tough because they've played so many times in reality that your mind is immediately kind of drawn to that kind of 2009-ish one. Obviously the final last season and the final in 2018. Yeah, I guess the fact they've played in two finals so recently makes it feel like it belongs somewhere in
grand.
The last kind of 5 years. Yeah, you're right. And having played so many times, it's not quite as sexy as it used to be.
I agree with you. Dave, what about Eintracht Frankfurt versus Napoli? I'm going 1987 UEFA Cup.
Wouldn't disagree with that. It's similar-ish to the Bruges-Benfica one, but a bit more weighted in favour of the Napoli side of things. They're a bit more Champions League-y, aren't they? Frankfurt are very Europa League, but Napoli do have a decent recent Champions League pedigree.
Borussia Dortmund versus Chelsea. Now, this is obviously quite a refreshing one because they just basically have never really played each other. And just even the thought of that yellow kit versus that blue kit is quite refreshing. So I'm very happy with that draw on that basis alone, James.
That feels like sort of 2012-13 when Chelsea are reigning champions of Europe and Dortmund are like kind of the young upstarts, the up-and-coming team, everyone's second favourite team. That's when you want that game to have been played that season. Like Dortmund smashing Chelsea as it's all kind of falling apart.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't envisage it any earlier than that. I mean, you could make a case for Cup Winners' Cup sort of 97 sort of era, but yeah, Dortmund were too good then, so that doesn't work either. This one's a slam dunk though, Dave. Inter Milan versus Porto. This is 2006-2007, isn't it? It's just Dejan Stankovic. It's great.
Yeah, it's the Jose Mourinho derby, I suppose, from that sort of era.
Yeah. Star-studded affair. I mean, 7-6 on aggregate as well, James.
You could plonk that game in any season, in any European competition, and it would feel right.
Any competition, yeah, absolutely right. Across all
it
three.
It could be Europa League, it could be anything.
Yeah, absolutely right. Great shout. Paris Saint-Germain versus Bayern Munich, arguably the grandest of them all. This does feel quite timeless as well, Dave. I mean, we can't have 70s because Paris Saint-Germain were a nascent club back then. But 95, 96, how about that?
Yeah, that works. Again, slightly clouded by the fact that they played each other in the final, didn't they?
Ruins it. Does ruin it.
Two seasons ago, does ruin it a bit. But also, that was one of the behind closed doors finals.
Doesn't
feel like it counts. Yeah.
And finally, James, then, AC Milan versus Tottenham. 1965?
Yeah, it feels like a very sort of old-fashioned, like Jimmy Greaves going back to his former club sort of setup. Like I've seen the highlights of it and it's in black and white.
Yeah, sort of random photographs of it that make it look like the entire stadium was in pitch black except for the photographer, that sort of situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all for that. Great. Glad we did that. Yeah, tied a little draw that. Very happy with that. Right, let's stick with European football now and cast our minds back to last week, Marseille versus Spurs. But before it all kicked off in the truest footballing sense, my favourite bit of it all, though, James, was Glenn Hoddle inventing a new adjective for a header.
It's a short corner, the ball's whipped in there. Look, it's a beautifully flighted ball. They're not set. Towerous header from Tavares. Look at that, it's a beautiful header.
I'm fine with Taurus, James. It feels like it should be a word. And it's one of those words that if you, despite not being a word, if you Google it, there'll be some Two Bob dictionary that has it in it. And then you're not sure what to do.
Well, I was just going to say, have you actually checked that it isn't? Because it definitely feels like a word. And it feels like it's been used in the right context.
It'll be some shitty dictionary like the Collins or dictionary.com. Collins really are in the mud these days. Merriam-Webster. How crap is Merriam-Webster? No, Taurus is not a word. 188 results in the history of Google for the word Taurus. But James, like I said, I quite like it. Better than towering, if anything, makes it sound even more grand.
Yeah, I think so. It really served the purpose there. I mean, and that was one hell of a leap as well. A Taurus leap.
It was.
It works perfectly.
Yeah. He doubled down on it, Dave, so he likes it, at least.
I'm completely with you. I mean, it was an amazing header. Slightly going into a slightly different area here, but was that a textbook header?
It was huge.
That's the sort of thing you would show to kids and say, this is how you do it.
Yeah, downwards.
And because he headed it down, yeah, exactly.
That is number one.
But then even the arms, the head, the movement, superb.
Everything a manager does on the touchline to ghost it in. Dave, this is perhaps one for you and your Sunday League sensibilities. This is from Lewis. It says, playing university football today, we booted the ball out level with our own 18-yard line, and the centre-back shouted that we needed to box the bastards in. I thought that was absolutely ridiculous. Their box is absolutely massive, maybe two-thirds of a pitch. Where on a football pitch is the limit for a team to be boxed in on a throw-in? That's a good question.
So is he saying that his own teammate said box the bastards in?
Assume so, yes.
So they've cleared the ball level with their own 18-yard line, and they're saying box the opposition in.
They're in their own half and they're trying to box.
Oh, that is ludicrous.
With like 80 yards of the pitch. Yeah.
That's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Wow, now I've reread it.
Yeah.
This is a scandal. But Dave, okay, so where is boxing in territory? What's the line?
Well, I think the reverse. I think if the defending team is taking a throw in level with their own 18-yard or back with an 18-yard line, then the attacking team boxes them in. You can't box. Boxing isn't defensive maneuver.
No, it's amazing. But then with a high press these days, maybe boxing in has moved right up the other end of the pitch. That's where boxing in begins now. Gegen pressing has hit the university football scene.
They are defending their own 18-yard line here. So you can't box someone in.
I know. It's madness.
On your own 18-yard line. You don't want them to be there. You don't want to box them in your own bit of the pitch. Box them up there.
Okay. Can I just say, it's taken the entirety of this conversation for me to actually visualise what's happened in this scenario, because I didn't understand it at all at the time. And now I just realise how absurd it is. Sorry to everyone involved here. Right, next. Divin de Buffalo writes in, James, says Sky Sports on their website described the last 20 minutes of Spurs versus Liverpool as the latter surviving the former's onslaught. What elements need to be present for an onslaught? I think this is separate, perhaps lesser thing than goals leading a charmed life or peppering or even a spell of concerted pressure. I think an onslaught is just waves of attack, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. But I feel like I reckon you probably need more shots than Spurs had in the last 20 minutes of that game, probably.
I don't know, because I think it's about it's as much about balls into the area, dangerous
That's
situations,
true.
As it is about shots.
It's not about shots,
I
agree.
You can be defending the crosses, or the keeper can be coming out and claiming it or whatever, but the onslaught is like the bombs being fired in.
So can a penalty area be under siege, or is it just the goal?
A penalty area can be under siege.
Because I feel like the penalty area was under siege, but not the goal.
This discussion reaching its natural endpoint here. James, is the typical onslaught more intense or less intense than the Alamo?
less intense, I think.
Because the Alamo is shots on goal, isn't it? That's front bodies in front of the ball and everything.
Yeah, I think the Alamo is just an incredibly like frantic period of the game where, like you say, bodies on the line, shots off the woodwork, everything going on. It can't be kind of slow, ponderous plodding stuff.
The Alamo is bullets out of small guns, lots of small guns firing at you, whereas the onslaught is like a medieval trebuchet, just smashing in big boulders.
Maybe not necessarily any weapons at all. It's like 500 men on horses coming at you, but with not necessarily with weapons.
But in
and
waves,
certainly not
though.
Bullets.
I think the waves element is crucial,
yeah.
I think.
It's going to come again.
It's not one period. Fine.
The Alamo is one discrete period of attack. It might be long, but it doesn't stop and start again. Mm. Right, fine. Got it.
Yeah.
This is from Adam Simpson, who witnessed the wonderful Mick McCarthy on co-commentary for Sheffield United versus Burnley at the weekend.
Teams are caught by a bit. Interesting, that is. A centre-forward running back with a centre-back and pulls him down. It's a foul. He gets away with it. If he's a centre-half running back with a centre-forward and pulls him down, yellow card. You're not bitter after all these years, Mick, are you? Not at all. Fully paid up member of the centre after.
I mean, now, Dave, obviously this is pure Mick McCarthy, but just my question here is, how many figurative football unions do you think he's a fully paid up member of? I'm guessing at least three.
Did he say club, though?
He did say club.
It's a more casual setup.
It's the same thing.
I like that. Well, it's different, isn't it? Because that brings...
We just go there on a Thursday night and have a chat.
Exactly. That brings to mind. I think that works perfectly. You know, Sam, Big Sam playing darts, pool, cheap beer... Mm. Carpeted. Mm.
Those stickers in the window that say Premier League available here on BT Sport 2006, 7, 7, 8, 8, 9, yeah. 11, 12, 14, yeah. 15, and that's it.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. Keith Curl pulling the pints behind the bar.
Oh, it's good. It's
much
good.
Better than the union. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, fair enough. Right. This is great. It starts off innocuously and just turns into something superb. Dave, Will Brown writes in and says, "The phrase, that wasn't the greatest of clearances, got me thinking. What does the greatest of clearances look like?" I think you're going to say the same thing that's in my head. Go.
I just think like meeting it absolutely flush on the volley and hammering the ball down the other end of the pitch or into the stands.
Yeah,
I think it does have to clear. I think clearing the halfway line is grounds for the greatest of clearances.
James, Dave has gone for pure distance and emphaticness of strike here, where I think we need to add an element of peril here. What about sort of goal line clearances? They count, right? I'm thinking ball dropping over from high, defender backpedaling and still managing to sort of overhead kick it off their line.
Yeah, hooks over the shoulder and then that distance, if you can do that, into the opposition or into the other half, opposition half, out for a throw-in. I don't think you want the ball to still be in play. You want it to go out for a throw-in.
That needs to be
into the second or third row of the stand where one of your fans then holds the ball to kill the game.
Okay. And that would be the greatest of clearances.
What about John Stones against Liverpool for Man City?
Yeah, I mean, that was just outrageous. Yeah, that should be it.
Is that the greatest of clearances?
Any of Ashley Cole's goal line clearances, of course. They were more blocks, though, weren't they? It's a fine line between a block and a clearance. It's a deliberate act, isn't it, clearance?
Yeah. But, well, so is a block, but a clearance. I mean, clearance is all in the name, right? Clearance, the ball has to go clear.
Yeah. It's true.
Whereas the block.
Welcome to the Football Cliches podcast. You're bang on. Absolutely right.
I'm pleased that we've got on to clearances today, actually, because something happened on Saturday when I was at Vicarage Road for the visit of Coventry City. We were chasing the game 1-0 down, and we had a goal kick late on in the game. And we were playing, these days, we play all our goal kicks short under Slaven Bilic. The bloke next to me shouted to Daniel Backman, "Just clear it from a goal kick."
Oh, I think this is quite an old-fashioned thing, like cleared up field.
That's funny because I think that's like a response to like high-pressing teams, isn't it? Because now it's a clearance, like a goal kick.
That's bad.
Because the other team is so high up the pitch.
Yeah, it almost takes the agency away from the team with the ball, clearing it upfield as if they're in a panic. It's their ball. It's a dead ball, James. Shouldn't be.
Exactly.
Shouldn't be a clearance. Agree with you. But it's time, James, for your debut in For My Sins Corner. You know the format. I would be playing you a short clip of audio from a piece of popular culture, and I want you to shout out the phrase "for my sins" when you think that very, very football-y phrase is about to be used in a universal context. This is from Holmes Under the Hammer.
So what was it about this maisonette that you liked?
The bedrooms have got so much character to them, and I felt for a maisonette, I felt it was pretty large. As soon as you walked in, it feels big.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd give it a go.
And is this something you do? Are you a property developer? Or?
Yes, I've done. This will be my fifth one now.
Oh, wow.
I'm a builder and I'm a London cab driver.
Oh, wow.
So what I used to do was, when the work was quiet, I didn't have the renovations
you
to do.
You bottled it. I can't believe you bottled it. I mean, I saw your thought process, though. You thought, builder, that's too obvious. He's gone too early. And then you waited.
But I thought the second... I was waiting for something more for my sinsy, though. I don't. Why is being a London cabbie for my sin. Even he didn't rock. He sort of went for my sins. He didn't quite. He's not quite believing it.
It's a very cabin phrase, isn't it? Though, I think it's definitely like if that was part of the knowledge. That's one of the things they get taught, is to chuck that in at the end of every sentence.
But those two things are quite. I feel like a builder and a cabbie kind of similar sort of professions. I don't think one or the other would be ashamed of being each other.
No,
whereas if he'd said like I'm a builder, but also do a bit of. Bit of gardening for my sins or something like would have made more sense.
I think with the black cab drivers, David, there's this kind of war of attrition about perception, isn't there? What do the people think that black cab drivers think about them?
Maybe,
And then it just gets into this chaos of confusion about what each other thinks about them. Then you throw cyclists into the equation as well. So maybe that's part of it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Some people think they charge too much. I don't know.
A poor showing from us both.
Yeah. Disappointing from a veteran as well on your part. But James, you'll be back another day.
You've messed with my head though with that one, the goalless.
I know.
For my sins.
I know. It's good. It's good to keep you thinking and on your toes.
Free.
Right. Alex White writes in, Dave, says, Darwin Nunez has just been called on Sky raw. What are the criteria for a footballer to be called raw? Is 154 club games and 13 internationals too experienced to be called raw? Raw is quite a patronising thing, isn't it? But I relate it more to sort of young players whose ability extends at that point only to running in straight lines very, very quickly and no end product.
Well, I think there does have to be the suggestion of an end product for you to be raw. I think we need to have seen glimpses of what they are capable of, but there is a lack of consistency twinned with the youth. I think that's raw, because I don't think you'd call somebody who didn't show potential raw. You wouldn't say raw, because raw is like raw talent, isn't it? I think I would say
it's a player who a young player who does a lot of things very quickly, that kind of bounces around between trying to do lots of different things without any of them really coming off. There has to be that sense of there being like a potential upswing. There can't be like any kind of degree of consistency with what they're doing.
But it does feel quite strange in Nunez's case. I mean the money shouldn't be an issue, but they paid a lot of money for him, so he shouldn't be raw. And it feels like, despite him being quite inconsistent, he seems to have a lot more about him than a traditionally raw player, is kind of the angle I'm going for here.
Yeah, I think so. I think partly it's to do with the fact that Carragher was it Carragher or Neville talking about this yesterday on the co-coms? There was a few moments where he like sort of miscontrolled the ball and didn't quite necessarily, you know, use the best technique in a few of the things he was doing. And they were calling him sort of, what are they calling him? Not sloppy, something like sloppy, messy or something like that. But it was like, I think that sort of plays into it. Like the fact that he occasionally he'll just rocket one into the top corner or great header or whatever. But other times he's still got a bit of a shank in him or a miscontrol or a bad touch.
A rough diamond, perhaps. Mm.
Is he too big to be raw? I feel like he's too like physically big to be like.
Yeah, maybe.
That's not the word you'd use to describe him, I don't think.
I just don't think his game's based enough around pace to be described as raw.
Would Andy Carroll have been described as raw when he came through at Newcastle in that period where he was looking really good, but before he got his big move?
It does work. It's conceivable, you know, player to have one obvious dimension and nothing else about him yet.
Early Drogba.
Yeah.
See what I mean? It's like they're still a bit rough around the edges, but there's something there.
Raw. Yeah, something to work with. That's the positive element. A coach has seen something to work with there. That's for sure. Mm. Okay.
Jamie Vardy would have been raw.
Oh, pure raw. Definitely. Mm. Yeah, 100%. Fleetwood era Vardy. Maybe even Stockbridge Steels.
First season at Leicester, I think. He's not long come up from non-league. He's still raw. But look at that pace.
Sean Something Bean's there. Character in When Saturday Comes. Raw.
Yeah.
Anyway, curious little questions like that and much, much more will be explored on the Football Clichés live tour, which kicks off tonight at Earth in Hackney before we go to Manchester's New Century Hall on the 15th of November and Dublin's Liberty Hall Theatre on the 16th of November. Tickets still available for those. Just go to myticket.co.uk or just Google Football Clichés Live.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Right, this is from Owen Maguire, who was watching Scott Parker on BT Sport at the weekend, doing the whole out-of-work manager reflecting on their whole existence thing, James. But there was a moment where Owen Maguire wondered just how old Scott Parker's kids are.
Whatever we do in life, we're in a rat race, and certainly at times it's the intense nature of what football management brings sometimes. You probably lose sight of some other things which are missing. I've got four young sons, and then they're not getting any younger, they're getting older, and there's time sometimes which is invaluable, really.
Scott Parker's 39-year-old sons. Can't use it for kids. It doesn't work.
You can imagine Scott Parker having children that act and dress exactly the same as him, right? They'd all be dressed in, acting exactly the same way, talking exactly as earnestly about their, you know, the GCSE coursework or whatever.
The honest thing, pros as soon as they were born, Dave. Great servants.
Oh, he's so earnest, isn't he? But the only thing in his defence is that footballers, I mean, they are sort of renowned for knocking out kids when they're like, you know, 20 or whatever, and having, you know, Phil Foden's got two kids, isn't he, I think, and it's like, which is fine, which is great, they're perfectly set up to four children, and why not do it, and it's a good thing for them.
Everything, like, there is geared towards raising children, yeah.
Yeah, but so like his kids could, so how old is he? In his early 40s, maybe about 40?
Yeah, must be.
Well, we could have like a few that are 20, a couple that are 17.
Don't know, not getting any younger, that's for sure. But yeah, sorry Scott, had to do it. Richie writes in, David says, Glenn Murray on Five Live just described the second Mo Salah goal against Spurs as an early Christmas present from Eric Dier. Too early, surely. Well, normally I would say this, and we would have this debate on an annual basis on the Football Clichés podcast, but the World Cup complicates matters, doesn't it?
How does it?
Because there's not much domestic football to be played between now and Christmas, so
right.
Christmas has essentially started in a Premier League sense.
Yeah,
you have
well,
to squeeze it in now.
There's only one more Premier League game before Christmas.
Hmm.
Of course.
That's a good point. Are Sky going to have to like use their Christmas music?
Yeah, the little
next
jingly
weekend?
Sort of background stuff.
And all the snowman stuff. They're going to have to whack it out next weekend.
Don't forget, you can watch Home Alone 2 on Sky Sports Max straight
in
after
six
this
weeks.
One.
Which further begs the question, could the same goal in the World Cup final be described, not, well, it's an early Christmas present, be the 18th of December?
That's... Yeah, it's bang on. Bang on for an early
premium,
Christmas present.
Yeah.
That doesn't belong in World Cup terminology. It just doesn't, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. Interesting tweet from the Athletic's Chelsea correspondent, Liam Toomey. After the game against Arsenal on Sunday, he says, I sympathise with the problems Potter is navigating at Chelsea at the moment, but huffed and puffed is an expression that was ever going to be well received after a performance like today. I kind of get this, Dave. I feel like a top six manager shouldn't be talking about his team huffing and puffing.
Potter is quite an honest sort of manager, isn't he?
It's mid-table chat.
It is. And I mean, they barely huffed and puffed, to be honest with you, yesterday. But yeah, it's unbecoming of a man.
Yeah, exactly.
In charge of Chelsea.
It's like that David Moyes, like a Manchester United tweet of a David Moyes quote that's since become a meme. That
yes.
They need to improve it there, like defending, passing, goal scoring, dribbling, and whatever else.
It's true.
Could it's go a similar sort of thing, isn't it?
I mean, I don't have any sort of deep Keynesian feelings about Potter's suitability to manage Chelsea at this point. But there were earlier warning signs about this, James. I think in his first match in charge at Chelsea, which I think they drew, afterwards Potter said something like, "I thought the boys gave everything." I said, you can't say that as a Chelsea manager. It's in the Champions League, I think, as well. You can't say the boys gave everything.
Yeah, you're right. He is. That's really highlight the subtle change in language you use between like a kind of an ambitious club, smaller club on an upward trajectory, and suddenly being at one of the mega clubs when like every single result is massively scrutinised.
Yeah, because I think this is an interesting one, Dave. I mean, it's not the first time a manager has moved from that between that sort of club to a club like that in terms of stature. But it's the first time it's probably happened in the Premier League for a long time mid-season. So it's quite a unique move in that respect. So the idea that he might have had to change the way he talks about games, almost completely autopilot, really, I think it's quite interesting.
It is, but I do think there is something about our perception of him, because we know he's come from where he's come from. And he needs to remember that as well in the... not just what he says, but the way he says it. He's very measured, but he's, I think at a club like Brighton, it's kind of, you're not too high, you're not too low. You kind of, if you have a good win, you've got to keep yourself in check. And if you have, you could lose three in a row and you need to still be level headed. But at Chelsea, you've got to imagine, you've got to remember the environment you're in. Because if you think, the boys gave everything, if Klopp or Pep said that, you could imagine them saying that. And they'd say it with like, with a
you're right, they
enthusiasm
would say it.
In a way. Oh, the boys, they give me everything. So good. They give everything.
Yeah. They're big enough to get away with it. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe there's this kind of sweet spot where you're not allowed to get away with it. But James, I'll tell you another thing. He's going to lose it soon. Like the veneer of calmness of Graham Potter, which has served him so well, is gonna slip.
He has such an AVB energy, that guy.
Right.
To me, like the two things just run really parallel.
I don't have him down like, as highly strong like that like, at all.
Obviously really intelligent bloke and a very good like coach and tactician. But I just feel like there's just a slight edge, like it could just like you say, he could just kind of lose it at someone and then suddenly it's all going to feel completely different.
Maybe not before Christmas, but it's going to happen. I could see
fast
it.
Fast forward to Graham Potter being in the Dakar rally.
I'm not suggesting he's going to get sacked and then sleep at the training ground afterwards like he did at Chelsea before.
Yeah.
Maybe beat it.
Speaking of Christmas, here is the Aldi Christmas/World Cup advert. It is a fruit and vegetable pastiche of Nike's legendary Brazil at the Airport classic, but with Peter Drury. Let's hear it.
That's Betty. Blistering pace from a fan. What an athlete. Ronaldo, beautifully done. Bean, he looks keen. Up for Macaroni. Wonderful technique. Bet Swede flips it on to Maradona. He's up to his old tricks again. And Kevin through on goal. Oh, he's missed it.
No real beef with the concept here, Dave. Reasonably well executed. But
yeah,
my big question here is, have they made enough? Have they used the big man well enough here, Drury?
I don't know. Do you know what? I'll let you into the inner workings of my mind here. As we were preparing for the upcoming live show the other day, I had a little thought about something we've got on the running order. And I thought, you know, could we get Peter Drury to voice that bit for us? And I thought to myself, no, it won't be the same, you know, out of context, out of his arena in the comedy. He'll do a good job, but it won't be true, pure Drury. Yeah,
I know
and
what
I
mean.
I think this is in the same sort of thing here. You know, maybe they could have given him a better script or whatever.
I think the script's let him down. Drury-isms. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but even if they allowed him to go full Drury, it's not going to sound the same when he's commentating over vegetables in an airport, is it?
Yeah, it's a tough gig. But James, you have identified an elephant in the room, I'm told.
That's the wrong music for that.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be it.
They've conflated two Nike adverts, haven't they?
Really?
The music from the 98 airport advert was...
Mascanada.
Thank you.
Wow.
You've saved me embarrassing myself by acknowledging I don't know what it was. But it obviously it's like a piece of... Was it Brazilian music?
Sergio Mendes, maybe? Yeah.
And there's no real reason for it, is there?
You know,
there's no topical reason to use Elvis, is there?
The Elvis song was in a subsequent Nike advert for the World Cup, wasn't it? Was it not? Was it the tournament one in the cage? I think.
Definitely was a bit later.
So, maybe, is that a rights thing? If in doubt, it's a rights thing,
isn't it? Better, it's a better...
They couldn't afford it.
It suits the advert better, though, I suppose, because it's quite more upbeat and pacey. I don't know, people...
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they thought people wouldn't notice.
Yeah, the common punter wouldn't get it. I don't know.
Mind you, to be fair, not a day goes by without James Moore mentioning one of the Nike adverts from the 90s or 2000s, so...
All the vegetables have got football pun names, but the carrot's just called Kevin.
Is it meant to be like a De Bruyne...
I think he's just called Kevin the Carrot. I believe he's just one of the sort of main characters. Character. I think that's right. Beth Swede, I think, is the best pun there. Would you agree?
Maradona.
Maradona, not bad.
Yeah, that's good. There have been a lot of puns on Maradona down the years, and I would say Maradona is one of the best ones.
Marrow's quite handy here because no one ever eats marrows or buys marrows or cooks marrows, but always handy for pun purposes. So
people grow marrows. Big ones.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, giant marrows. Anyway,
diminutive marrow.
Next up, a great footballing word brought to our attention by Leo Watkins. James, he says, what is the criteria needed for being clattered? What type of tackle is it? Is it automatically a yellow or even a red card? Can a clattering be a legal yet heavy challenge? Let's deal with the first thing. What type of tackle is a clattering?
I'm thinking side on.
Yeah.
Like a real sort of skidding across wet turf.
Agreed.
Not like studs up, but certainly not studs.
Studs
down.
Are not an issue in clattering. Yeah, absolutely right. This is a tangle of limbs.
Like kind of shins into shins. Yeah, the guy goes flying.
Damn right.
So it's not, I mean, it's probably like a foul half a time, maybe.
Because you win the ball almost. Most of the time.
You get the ball quite,
well.
You know, like maybe 50% of the time he's going to get the ball.
I think crucially here is it's not a leg breaker. It's a full body experience. You're basically taking their whole lower body in one go. And as James rightly points out, there's no studs involved. There's no cynical modern nastiness here. It's pure old-fashioned violence. And if you broke your leg in a clattering, you're just quite unlucky. That's the way the leg crumbled, unfortunately. But crucial point that James made, Dave, it's definitely a sideways on thing most of the time into the advertising hoardings, a clattering. You could clatter someone from behind, but I don't think it's traditional.
It's just, you could clatter into someone in a way that almost like Callum Wilson, Hugo Lloris situation from a few weeks ago. That was sort of a bit of a clatter. They sort of clattered into each other, didn't they?
I would say clattering into someone in the penalty area is a totally different thing. That implies to me like a more kind of clumsy contact and not necessarily like a kind of full body conscious act of violence. Like a kind of clumsy kind of tangling of limbs that then results in the player going down and then that team getting a penalty.
Slightly concerned here that one or both of you think that sort of shoulder barges are included in clattering. This is a leg situation.
No, but I think you can have like a full body to body clatter.
Yeah.
But it has to be a tackle. It has to be a sliding tackle. It has to be a
it's not
horizontal
like a conscious lean.
You can't clatter someone with your shoulder. Wow.
Oh, well, I disagree actually. I think they're two separate things. I think you're right. Like I think there's a clumsy element to a clattering, perhaps.
Yeah.
But there's also a cynical element to it, which is what you say. Yeah. A fullback's kicked the ball down the line, and the attacking player has slid in late and clatters into the fullback. Yes. But I think that clumsily two players could clatter into each other and maybe clash heads.
A
or
neutral clattering.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe. Maybe. But it's a great football word, though, James. It's very evocative, a clattering.
I think there's a certain stage in the game where you want to see a clattering.
Yeah.
But like, if all else fails, let me see someone get clattered.
Mm. Yeah, it's like the poor man's taking of the scruff of the game's neck, isn't it? If you can't do it with the ball, then go and clatter someone.
Yeah, if you can't get the ball, you have to do it that way.
Exactly, yeah. Born of frustration. Very interesting discussion. Now, I'm very tempted to introduce... I think it's just you, mate, corner, because this is a fantastic candidate for it. This is from Nick Van Dyke, who says, am I alone in thinking St Mary's looks wetter than other Premier League stadiums when it chucks it down? No idea. I wish I did kind of want to agree, but I can't think of any reason to.
Is there any possibility? You know, there's that thing that people always say about Manchester. Actually, it is wetter than everywhere else because of the Pennines and clouds and other geology and whatever.
What's the rainiest Premier League stadium in your head, James? I'm going Goodison all day long.
Yeah, Goodison is good. Because you do you do kind of like put rainy and misery in the same sort of place in your mind, don't you?
It wasn't about that. It's just pure aesthetics.
I've been to Goodison Park once in my life, and it was absolutely pissing it down.
Right.
For a Europa League game against Lyon.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I think Fulham is quite an underrated rainy ground. Right. Maybe not so much now they've got that new stand, but when it was like much more open.
Right.
And you get the wind whipping in off the Thames. If you're stood near that end of that stand, you get absolutely drenched.
Great water cycle chat here. This is great.
Southampton is on the docks, isn't it? Down.
Yeah, more water around. So
on the subject of St. Mary's, I just want to bring this up now that it's been mentioned. Last week's episode, you and Charlie were talking about grounds that were rocking or bouncing.
Oh yeah,
and you asked the question: what's the least rocky ground in the Premier League? It has to be St. Mary's by a country mile, surely. Can you ever remember when St. Mary's has been rocking?
It's a good, very good point. I mean, there must have been a couple of sort of isolated high points under Hazenhutter where his high octane brand of football might have got them off
maybe
their feet. But
the Pochettino, maybe, yeah. But I just associate it with like that game against Newcastle yesterday. It's like they're always in an early slot, and you've got like the low winter sun, and it's just pretty quiet.
Yeah, bang on. It is the least rocky stadium. Very good shout. Right, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner.
Ford Super Sunday.
Well, we kind of had to do this, really. I mean, I know he's been banging this drum for a long, long time, James, but this has to come to a head at some point. But I know he's self-aware. But Richard Keys tweeting, why is this allowed every week? Tagging in PGMOL. Arteta's been jumping up and down all game, way outside his technical area. Potter is in his, and his fourth is watching. Do something about this man. This man! The moral panic of Mikel Arteta outside his technical
accompanied
area.
Accompanied by a photograph of the big screen at BN. He just like turned around and taken a picture of the massive screen.
It's like he's written into Crime Watch, Dave, with some CCTV from his front porch.
The tagging of the PGMOL does take it into the slightly more formal complaints. Are they obliged to now reply to Keezy, taking through the procedure?
Maybe they should. Maybe PGMOL should be like, I don't know, Virgin Trains or something. Like, say, sorry to hear about this, Richard, but we'll get back to you. And then it's like, Claudia or something like that.
If you DM me more details, I'll be happy to take it from there.
PGMOL, some sort of beleaguered customer service operative saying, we have seen it and we are very sorry to hear about your experience.
Just signed off, Mike.
If he gets justice about this one day, he is going to be unbearable.
I mean, the thing is, it's now become such a thing that I can't take my eyes off Arteta now in these games. And it is persistent, isn't it? He's always just outside. Always.
The photo, James, is damning. Look at the fourth official just standing there doing nothing. Nothing.
He's doing absolutely nothing about it, almost like it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Right then. To play us out, I don't know what the John Lewis Christmas advert is this year, but instead of some breathy, poignant cover version of a 1990s dance hit, they should just have this. Alistair Murdoch McCoist on BBC quiz show The Wheel, helping an oncology nurse to the £82,000 top prize after correctly steering on the correct location of the ancient city of Troy.
Have you got any clue?
Funnily enough, I don't think it's Egypt.
Okay.
And I don't think it's Greece. I'm no expert at all.
No.
I'm leaning towards Turkey.
Turkey and Iraq.
Turkey and Iraq.
Ancient city of Troy.
Trojan horse, Trojan war. Turkey. I don't think it's Egypt. I don't know why, Helen.
Okay.
I'm not sure about Greece.
No.
Greece is a kind of obvious one.
A few seconds. Yeah. What are you going to lock in?
I'll lock in Turkey.
Honestly, David Walker, is there a single scenario, emergency scenario in your life that you wouldn't trust McCoist to get you out of?
I think they should immediately install him, get rid of Clarkson and put McCoist in as the new host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Mm, incredible. Incredible. James, do you think all that groundwork he did at the 2018 World Cup has breathed new life into this nurse's life?
Yeah, you can see that stood him in good stead, I think. Yeah. That the amount of research he was doing, I mean, you can see, yeah, you can definitely see that could have helped. That's and you're right, it's made a massive difference to her life.
Yeah.
How much money did that win her?
£82,000.
Decent.
Brilliant. And he celebrated it with such joy as well.
Yeah.
Superb. Get in there!
Get in there! Turkey! if I die tomorrow, I want the last thing I've heard to be Alistair McCoist pronouncing the word turkey.
Don't die before the start of the live show.
Not. And don't die on...
It's all right, they'll be hearing this tomorrow, so it'll be on Wednesday, so it's fine. RIP me. Thanks to Dave for joining us on the adjudication panel today.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, James Moore.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll see you in Hackney if you're coming to the show. Cheers!
The Athletic.